Hello and welcome to Tech Weekly, the technology podcast from The Guardian that defragments your bits and bytes and replaces them with a shiny, clean, well-organized operating system. I'm Alex Kratosky and I am 100% virus protected. I also have capitulated to the gods of touch telephony and feel absolutely golden delicious. Recommendations for useful iPhone apps for train times and GPS running systems, please to tech@guardian.co.uk. Joining me in The Guardian's shiny new offices are Jemima Kish, Charles Arthur, and over the line, Bobby Johnson, our man in San Fran. Do you like how I did that? Man, San Fran.
I see what you did there.
I'm a poet.
Slick.
I am a poet. Welcome to you all. So what have you mostly been playing with this week, Jemima?
Diet. I've been trying out combinations of cottage cheese and ginger beer.
And?
Oh, sorry, was I supposed to talk about technology?
No, not at all. And pickles in there at all?
Roll mop herrings.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, anything in vinegar.
That sounds delicious.
Yeah.
Anything to do with technology at all?
Some stuff.
Some things. Charles, you may have something more interesting to say.
Possibly not. I've been fascinated by Jonathan Ross's Twitter feed and the fact that he's going around debunking all sorts of people who are claiming to be various celebrities. No, I rang him on the phone and that's not so-and-so at all.
Well, he's sort of qualified to do it, isn't he?
He pretty much is, given he's got everyone's phone number. His iPhone must be about as valuable as an iPhone could be, couldn't it?
Let's steal it.
Bobby, anything that you've been playing around with? Obviously, you've been at CES.
Well, I think we're going to hear a lot about that later. The last couple of days, I've been playing around with lying on the sofa playing GTA 4, trying to recover from the hell that is the Consumer Electronics Show. That's about as high tech as I've got.
These are the glorious experiences of being a technology journalist. Well, on this week's show, we're looking back at the technology events that rocked America last week at the Consumer Electronics Show and at Macworld, including an interview with the developers of a mind-bending machine, a computer game controlled with brainwaves. Yes, Bobby meets the folks behind MindFlex. Plus, we cast our eyes back over CES and Max. Plus, we cast our eyes over the CESs and Mac worlds that were in 2009 with analysis of all the news from the west coast of the USA. All this and a bumper pack of blog comments and feedback coming up on Tech Weekly. Chew on this. Over the last week or so, Tech Weekly subscribers have been treated to a veritable smorgasbord of reports from Bobby Johnson, who's been bringing us the latest from the Macworld and Consumer Electronics shows. Now that the dust has settled and the rumor mill has ground to a halt, let's reflect on the gadgets that are ringing our bells in 2009. Bobby, you got your mitts on plenty of tech, from the weird to the wonderful. What's the latest stuff that you found?
Well, I really enjoyed CES this year in a way, I think, because there weren't any massive winners. You know, it wasn't dominated by one particular company or anything like that. So that really meant there was a bit of time to go around and play with some of the weird and wonderful stuff that's always there, you know, the crazy, batshit insane, ludicrous stuff. So to illustrate that, I think we'll hear me mucking around with a few bits and bobs. We'll start off by speaking to Mattel, who are the people behind a really strange little game called MindFlex that really is a kind of kids' version of telekinesis.
There you go.
So I've been hearing a lot about this one.
I bet you have.
Everyone's excited or freaked out or believe there's a little man underneath here doing something.
Well, you can check personally. There's nobody down there.
I can't see anybody.
No secret controls or anything. It really works. It's a game, and the object of the game is to navigate a ball through an obstacle course of your own design. Now, the way you move the ball through the obstacle course is what's unique, okay? And that is with the power of your mind. That's where this headset comes in, okay? Now, the headset has three different sensors. Would you mind if I put it on your head?
Fire away.
Okay,
go on.
Great. One sensor is right here in the front of right in front of your forehead there.
Yep.
And then two clip onto your earlobes.
I'm feeling freaked out already. I feel like I'm in Tron or something.
You
but
are.
But with earrings. It's
Tron in drag. No, here we go. What you need to do is concentrate on levitating the ball.
Okay.
Really focus on levitating that ball right now, okay?
Okay, I'm thinking very hard. Oh, it's wobbling a bit.
Now, see, you got a little distracted because it wobbled. Now, that's very typical, okay? Don't let it break your concentration. Focus. Bring that ball up in the air, okay? Good. That is great.
Yay.
That's great. It's really good. Those lights.
So it's gone about a few inches up. Well, it's gone what, 5-6 inches
up? Yeah, it's quite a bit. Yeah, and now you're as you relaxed and broke your concentration, it fell back down again, which is great because that shows that you're learning how to control it. Okay, so as you bring it up again, try to bring it back down. Just relax. There you go. Good. Bring it back up
again. I'm a master already. I don't believe my brainwaves can ever
succeed
in doing anything.
Can I explain to you how it works
a
little bit? Well, let's start with the headset. What's happening is, as all of us concentrate and focus, our brain creates more and more theta waves. This thing registers the theta waves, turns that information into a signal that it sends to the MindFlex game unit, okay? And as you concentrate more, as more theta waves are produced, the fan spins faster and the ball goes higher. That's how you're moving the ball up and down.
When can we buy it and how much might it cost?
Well, in the U.S. and Canada, it's going to be out this fall of 2009, and it's $80 U.S. And then internationally, we're going to take it out next year.
I've clearly lost all my concentration because the ball's doing nothing. There's nothing going on here. Oh, no, it's switched
I actually turned it off.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
That's good. That's good. So one of the gadgets that we've heard a lot about, a lot of buzz coming out of nowhere, really, is the Move It from Genie, which is essentially a media player that's running Google's Android operating system. I'm here with Dennis Soanes from Genie, who's going to show us through. So Dennis, what can this do precisely?
Well, you know what? This device allows people to stay in touch in any hotspot. So it is not a cell phone, it's not connected to a cell phone carrier. Once you buy this device, you can surf the internet, talk to your friends on Skype. It also has a video player.
Most of your other products are digital picture frames. This obviously isn't. What's driven you to move to building this, and why did you choose to go ahead and put Android on it?
Android is an open operating system where anybody, an app developer, could go out and develop cool things that would run on the Genie Move It Mini. And so we think the market is ripe for a new platform that everyone can enjoy.
When are we going to see it for retail, and how much might it cost?
That's a great question. So our roadmap is to introduce this in the third quarter of 2009. The price point would be $149. This product allows you to buy the hardware one time, not get into any contracts or recurring charges through the cell phone carriers, and talk on, text on, you know, chat on.
So a tablet personal media player that's running the Android operating system, that's impressive. But I moved on, went to one of the other halls at the show to meet Steve Salmon from LocateU. Now, they're a British company who were at CES demonstrating their GPS watch, which tracks where your kids are.
As far as the child is concerned, it is a digital watch. The whole ethos of the new Make product is to give parents additional peace of mind, to let the children go out and play, interact socially with their peers, and deal some of the obesity issues that we're all very aware of with our children. We've concentrated very much upon simplicity. The key differentiator, though, with the new Make product is that you track and locate your child, not the technology. If this new Make is then forcibly removed from your child as a parent, you then get an immediate alert to the fact that has arisen.
You get an alert, but what kind of alert do you get?
Well, what happens is that you will receive a text message direct to your mobile phone, and that will tell you that the bracelet has been compromised. It will give you a street name and postcode of your child's location, and actually a link to Google Maps with your child's location shown on a map. That will also be sent as an email to your home email. The strap has got a steel-woven cable within it, much similar to a brake cable on a bicycle. It is impossible to cut this strap. We've tested it with bolt cutters. So the total integrity of the watch is there. The only way to remove this watch is actually to release it. We decided not to put a locking mechanism here because we didn't want to scare children into having a watch on their wrist that they couldn't remove if they had to remove it.
How much is this going to cost to buy and use?
Okay, well, this will cost £149 to buy, and it will cost £4.99 per month for the service. We tried to make it as simple to use. So if you want to know where your child is, you simply text WRU, where are you, to the new mate. We will then check that mobile phone is an authorised mobile phone, so we don't want just anybody contacting the new mate. And again, we will then send the location information to the parent.
When I talk to people about stuff you can do with GPS, there's a there's a kind of, people are either really into it or they think there's something a bit creepy about it.
Well, I think people get scared by technology. You know, when car navigation devices first came out, there was a lot of talk about people going down blind roads and etc. And I think it's a development of trust with technology. Don't just use it blindly, use it intelligently. And there's no substitute for good parenting. And we're not trying to tell parents, don't be good parents. What we're saying is, we can actually help you be a good parent.
So those were some highlights from CES. Thank you very much, Bobby. Right, I just want to quickly touch on a couple of those things. First of all, Bobby, what does it actually take to be the master of your own mind?
I wish I knew. I really do. It was really strange playing MindFlex because I was quite sceptical. They said it was monitoring my theta waves, which sounded rather ludicrous to me. But, you know, basically there's a fan underneath the game board, which is the speed of which is controlled by how hard you're concentrating. So the harder you concentrate, the faster the fan goes, the higher the ball moves in the air. But it's good fun. I can imagine it being a pretty good seller around Christmas.
Can we Twitter through it?
Oh, of course you can.
Oh, brilliant!
It's got,
thanks.
It's got APIs and everything.
So, Bobby, you also said that you really enjoyed playing with a lot of the stuff, lots of interactive toys, gamey like things. What was the proportion of the game things to non-game things, and was it different from last year?
There were probably slightly more gaming bits overall, I'd say, but which were largely dominated by Rock Band and Guitar Hero. The sheer number of Rock Band and Guitar Hero controllers that different people were selling was pretty mad, really, and a little bit boring. I mean, you know, a fake guitar is a fake guitar. But yeah, I did have a go on the Emperor, though, which was a kind of computer workstation that was really optimized for gaming. This was a kind of space pod that you climbed into and kind of shuts down, closes around you. It's got a triple 19-inch screen, so that kind of wraps around you and is meant for blowing things to Kingdom Come in first-person shooters. Unfortunately, probably a little bit too expensive for most people. That came in at about $40,000.
Jesus. And also a little bit large as well. I mean, like most of these things, you know, quite big, and you can't really imagine them in your living room. But one thing I wanted to touch on was how many problems there are with the locate you, with that little watch gadget doohickey that you talked about there at the end.
Does that worry you?
I think Alex means a lot of technical problems. I think she's referring to the whole ethical issue.
Errant spouses, I think.
Yes, that one that deserves to be in SkyMall next to the one that you can follow your spouse and catch how quickly your children are driving down the road.
But it shows you how inexpensive and easily deployed GPS chips are now. You know, you can imagine in a couple of years' time that will come down even more. And maybe it's going to happen whether we like it or not.
Well, you can read up on all these companies and their products, and I'm sure get in on the debates that we will be having in the future at guardian.co.uk/technology. Check out some of the tech in action with our rather hilarious series of videos featuring Bobby, I have to say, in your element. We'll also be getting more introspective on what it all means later on in the pod. So that was last week's news. Jemima, what's happening now?
Microsoft has invested $24 million in small Israeli startup Entrig, that specialises in touchscreens for PCs, betting that consumers will want to move away from the 40-year-old computer mouse. Windows 7, the latest Microsoft operating system, includes support for a range of touchscreens and is due out in the next year. European venture capital group Balderton stuck two fingers up at the downturn by raising £282 million for media and tech investments. The firm behind Setanta and Betfair made some canny exits in 2008, including the sale of Bebo to AOL and MySQL to Sun Microsystems, but says 2009 is a better time to invest. Performing two Google searches produces as much carbon dioxide as boiling the kettle for a cuppa, claims Harvard researcher Alex Wissner-Gross. His work was immediately questioned by Google, among others, who said that a PC will use more energy while performing the search than the search itself. One of Twitter's most amusing parody accounts was hacked by Twitter this week. At the request of the Daily Mail, Daily Mail UK became not Daily Mail UK without so much as even an email notification, even though Twitter's terms state that parody accounts are exempt from impersonation.
Thanks very much, Jemima. Well, Twitter has actually had quite a lot of trouble recently, hasn't it? Not just with the hacking, but with...
There's always something going down in Twitterland.
Yeah, but phishing issues
as
well.
Yeah, phishing and all sorts of stuff. And Jonathan Ross getting a huge amount of press because he's just Jonathan Ross and obviously the tabloids love him. But he has been doing quite a bit of outing of celebrities, or celebrities in inverted commas, on Twitter and finding out if they're real or not. This is all utterly irrelevant if you don't use Twitter, but if you do, it's very entertaining.
But the fascinating thing about it is that the presence of Jonathan Ross and the presence of so many other people who, you know, are, quote, celebrities, means that you can go and find out what they're thinking and you can, you know, put your opinions over to them. And Ross does reply to people.
Yes, absolutely.
From time to time. In effect, it disintermediates all the newspapers that have for so long lived on the fact that they could get the celeb quotes and, you know, things like this.
Back to the Daily Mail thing. The official Daily Mail Twitter feed is just, you know, they've taken the RSS feed and it spits out all their news stories. There's no personality. There's no person sort of embodying the Daily Mail, you know, going out there and talking to people and discussing what's going on in these stories. It's very one way. I could rant here, but I won't. But
calm,
you know,
down,
it just shows
dear.
They've got no sense of humour. I mean, this parody, if it was an annoying kind of crap parody, you'd kind of think, well, yeah, of course they're probably going to get in touch with Twitter and ask them to take it down. It's really, really funny. I won't reel them off now, but if you go to notdailymail_UK, read some of his tweets, he's damn funny, and they should frankly have more of a sense of humour about
it. But possibly this is the thing, is that the parody is too good. It's so good that it looks as though it's the real thing.
Charles, can you tell us a little bit more about the Google Carbon issues that's been going on?
Well, the idea that doing a search on Google burns up all this amazing amount of energy and hence releases all the carbon dioxide in the atmosphere doesn't quite hang together. And as we said, Kevin Anderson did a rather good post pulling together all the different calculations that have been made against this. I mean, Google, for example, is investing very heavily in using renewable energy. It's got, for example, hydroelectric powered plants for searching. And Matt Cutts of Google did a response blog post that said, actually, no, this is nowhere near right. The original post that kicked this all off has come from a startup which is interested in doing things like measuring your carbon outputs. And one sort of suspects that part of it is to gather a lot of media attention, which of course has succeeded, but that also it's been a bit badly done because the estimate is assuming that all the energy used in the PC is going into the search, which just isn't the case.
Well, you can find out more about these stories and can keep up to date with the latest headlines by hitting guardian.co.uk/technology. It's all there, so read all about it. It was a week for the geek. First Macworld, then CES. So much plenty, so many rumors, so little time. But out of the storm of hearsay and conjecture came some rather fantastic technology. First up, Bobby, let's talk a bit about the announcements. What can you say about Windows 7?
Well, the Windows 7 announcement was fairly lackluster. We saw a demo of what it was going to be. Now we've I think the beta version is available for download about now. It looks okay. There's nothing too remarkable there. We know that it's optimized for touch screens. We know it's got a few UI changes, but really it's evolution, not revolution. Even though a few people would want them to go back from Vista and start all over again. The other stuff we saw, Apple really had, it was a bit of a damp squib in terms of their announcements. One of the big ones, though, was the Palm Pre, which is Palm's attempt to get back on track. They're certainly hopeful, and there was a lot of buzz about the Pre kind of putting Palm back on the top table. So as far as the big announcements go, it was largely fairly expected, and so the buzz really came from other areas rather than the massive companies.
So this year, thankfully, it was really all about the technology then?
Yeah, I think so. You know, there were lots of things on display, which, and kind of slightly more innovation than some years maybe, rather than everyone saying we're going to build the biggest thing or the smallest thing. We saw people kind of trying out new ideas a little bit more than we might have done in the past.
Would you say that there was proportionately more useful technology as opposed to gimmicks, or the other way around?
I think we saw an increased amount of small stuff that could make a proportionally larger difference. So, you know, widgets on your TV screen, or powerless charging, which there were quite a few examples of. You know, things that seem quite gimmicky, but I imagine in a few years' time could actually be very commonplace across the board.
Jemima, did anything strike you? Because you were covering CES from here.
Yeah, well, I was just sort of looking at bits and bobs and trying to pick out any trends, really. I mean, there was a bit of 3D TV stuff that was just sort of plodding along, and, you know, a few new TV sets. There was web TV, as Bobby just mentioned. There were the usual kind of GPS and entertainment gizmos for cars. Nothing really blew me away. The Polaroid Pogo is really interesting, though. This is a little Bluetooth printer that will work with your mobile phone, for example. It doesn't have any toner or anything in it. It uses sort of inkless paper. And you print out sort of 2x3-inch sticker pictures. This is really cool. This is the kind of thing that Moo.com would sort of do really well with. It's like Moo on the go or something. But these kind of little gadgets are great. And this is the kind of thing I could see people doing some quite creative sort of art project around, really, sort of on the go, tied in with mobiles and location. And that was really exciting. There's a lot of potential for that. It's about $150, and then $10 for a pack of 30 photos. So hopefully that'll be launched soon. That was the most impressive thing, I thought.
Charles, did you attach yourself to anything?
The thing I was most interested by, I have to say, was the Palm. There's a lot of expectation building up about the Palm Pre, which is built around just HTML, CSS, and a bit of JavaScript to run its operating system. And I think people have a lot of expectations from that. But the other thing I thought was just more generally, which is that Macworld, to me, looks like it's a conference that's going to die. If Apple isn't there, then, you know, why would people go? Because they can't play with the new cool Apple products. And if there aren't the people going to go and play with the cool Apple products, then why would the exhibitors be there? And if the exhibitors aren't there, then why would people go to go and play with the exhibitors? You know, it just becomes a self-defeating circle, if you like. And CES, of course, generally smaller because the economic downturn in the US just meant that companies have less money to spend.
Bobby, are there any rumors as to why Apple isn't going to be at Macworld next year, or any actual sort of solid facts?
I think the reason that Apple isn't at Macworld is that it just doesn't serve its purposes anymore. You know, it's forced to announce stuff in January that comes after Christmas, which isn't a very useful time for it to sell anything. You know, they're forced to work by someone else's timetable, and if they don't announce anything, their stock takes a beating. So I think they're just looking at it in the long term.
Well, optimism all around. The best of the rest is available for you to read or view or listen at your leisure. Mountains of video, podcast, and wordy features are available at guardian.co.uk/technology. It's been a while since we visited the blogs, and we're sorry. It's not like there's been nothing happening. You've been commenting like mad. So here's a look at the best. Charles, what's tickled your fancy on technology over the past couple of weeks?
Well, mine was, my favourite comment actually was on the Windows 7 beta, the unanswered questions that Jack posted ahead of Steve Ballmer's speech. And this one came from XYZZY. Easy to say, come with the name. Who said, I slung Windows 7 into the VMware virtual machine on my Mac this morning. This is the future of Microsoft. It looks like the graphics was done as an undergraduate project. And it looks like the Linux desktop, in short, most of which was done as an undergraduate project.
Well, over on the games blog, I've been sounding off about the latest allegations against online games. This time, a U.S. Federal Trade Commissioner has, for some reason, proposed that World of Warcraft is the biggest cause of college dropouts in the U.S. So you can imagine my response, and of course the response of people around the world. So perhaps the not completely objective games bloggers have weighed in with their thoughts. It has actually been a wide mix. So for example, Spew spewed. I think a lot of people on here would privately admit that periodically too much gaming has a negative effect on their lives. I don't have to theorize about the meaning of addiction to know I do. But meanwhile, in the other corner is Midwinter, who says and echoes probably quite a lot of what the rest of the commentators have said, If someone's unable to prioritize their education over a computer game, then it's probably no great loss that they drop out, but to call it an addiction is daft. If they stayed up all night reading Harry Potter novels or watching the full Adam Sandler back catalog, would they be considered to be addicted to those things? Nope. Deluded maybe, but not addicted.
That was actually a point raised by Jane McGonigal at South by Southwest last year in her keynote speech.
Indeed. Well, I hope to see more
of that. I remembered that using my brain.
By the way, Alex, how's the PhD going?
Yes, it is coming. April, August, August.
So you keep saying, Alex.
No, I keep saying previous months. Now it's August, officially. Anyway, Jemima, you've been covering CES from over here. Have you got any gems or anything
else? This is not CES related, actually. This is rumours in the US on various blogs that AT&T is going to start offering for just $10 a month a kind of tethering service. So you'll be able to use your iPhone with your laptop as a modem, which is totally bloody obvious and just infuriates me that, you know, it's like the missing link in what you can do with your Apple hardware. Anyway, so this has gone down fairly well. Supposedly, AT&T were looking at $30 to start with, but to make it more appealing to Apple, they reduced it to $10, which isn't very much money in the scheme of things. Phaser, who always gives good comments, says, "I'd like tethering on my iPhone, but I sure as hell won't even pay one penny extra for it." It must be said that this was rumoured to be coming at Macworld and didn't. I take any rumour of any iPhone improvement with a grain of salt now because it's quite clear the iPhone isn't capable of doing anything.
Uh-oh. Well, you can check out these live discussions, mudslinging matches and debates at guardian.co.uk/blog/technology/pdan/games blog. But it's not just been the blogs where we've heard from you. Mono Johnny sent in an email to reprimand us for ignoring British mobile operating system Symbian. And he says, "You never, never, never seem to mention Symbian. While swooning over the iPhone or crooning on about Android, as if all this stuff is new, Symbian was spearheading this whole thing 10 years ago. He assures us that he is in no way affiliated with the company. He's just a diehard Scion user." So, Bobby, I think you're going to take the next one.
Yeah, this was, I like this. This was a brilliant response from Jez O'Brien, who was appalled at my turn of phrase on the Macworld podcast. He said, "So today's podcast on Macworld, did I hear the expression pulled out of their ass at about 1 minute 21? I almost choked on my toast. This is the language of frustration slash aggression and is totally out of context for this type of report, though it may have just been unexpected during what was my breakfast. Love the pods, but detention after hours for that." All I have to say, I'm not going to say it. It would be far too frustrating slash aggressive.
Bobby, you're on the naughty list.
Yeah. If you think pulling something out of an arse is the worst we can do, you mustn't have listened to our blooper reel, is all I can
say. Well, speaking of the blooper reel, on Facebook, people are, it seems that the outtakes from the 2008 holiday episodes were universally adored. Simon Thurston from London thinks that we should make an album.
Hell yeah!
We could make one every week, actually.
We probably could, actually. Anyway, if you have any comments, concerns, or anything else to say, do send an email, give us a tweet, write on our wall, or give us a Skype. So many options. You can find out all the details at guardian.co.uk/techweek.
In this week's tech section from The Guardian, Tim Anderson tells you all you need to know about Microsoft's next operating system with a review of the Windows 7 beta. We find out whether spam is falling in line with the economic downturn and whether crime maps are any good. With millions already sold, the iPhone, iPod Touch are quickly becoming a favourite with games developers. We look at Apple's gaming console and how the biggest accounting scandal in outsourcing is creating problems for businesses in India. The World Bank's banned three companies from contracts. What will be the wider effect on outsourcing? This and more in Thursday's tech section with The Guardian.
Well, that's it for this week. Many thanks to the gang at CES, Bobby, for your blinding work pounding the floor. And cheers as well to our home crowd, Jemima, Charles, and producer Scott. In the meantime, I'm Alex Kratowski. See you next Tuesday.